I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Issues 2024. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stoles. Welcome to Issues 2024, Tom. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. Pleasure to be here.
You know, we got a drought that continues across South Central Kansas. City of Wichita is considering mandatory watering schedules. How is the drought impacting Sedgwick County government, if at all, Tom?
Well, we're part of the team here, so anywhere that we have facility, and the county has facility all over the county, we're trying to watch our water usage just like all citizens are. That means being smart with how you water grass, being smart with how you clean equipment, wash cars. The city's more in the line of fire on that because they're the utility that manages water. But the county really just, we're just like every other citizen trying to manage our water usage judiciously.
Are all the smaller communities in the county, are they all using Wichita water?
Some do, some do not. Derby, for example, Park City, they use Wichita water. And of course, they're going to be, we're all in this together, whether we use Wichita water or whether we have our own ground source, and that's even as homeowners or governments. We all feed off the Equisbed if we have private wells, and that's for municipalities the same way that have private wells. They're feeding off the Equisbed, and that is a limited resource. So this kind of weather pattern that we're in right now, it impacts all of us, and we all need to work together because we're feeding from the same trough, so to speak. So we need to be careful with managing until we get some relief from the skies on this. So it was raining out west today when I drove in. I actually drove in rain for the first time in a month.
Little tiny thunder shower out there.
Yeah.
What's the status of the county search for a new administrative officers, Tom?
Well, that's on the list of many things that we are juggling right now, but let me just give you how we sit today. We're in the Ruffin building here at 100 North Broadway. We pay a lease rate on that, so we are renting here. We are tenants. The commission has talked and we were adding it up. We're actually into decades now. Many, many years we've talked about what do we do administratively with the space. Really, the part that has forced this issue is, anytime in county government, we always try to limit the growth of government. But the reality is that the criminal justice system is growing, and what brought us to the administrative space discussion has brought that to a head, as we had to give up space in 525 North Main, the courthouse, for the court system and the district attorney's office. The state of Kansas added courtrooms a couple of years ago, and that is what pushed out administration. So the manager's office, the commission office, finance, human resource, everyone had to move out so that we could build additional courtrooms and additional space for the district attorney's office. So that brings us to where we sit today, and the commission has three options that they're looking at currently. Number one is to stay here and be a tenant, to lease here. Now, there is a belief politically, and this goes to all governments, that taxpayers would prefer to own their assets rather than rent them. So with that optic in mind, the other two options are to own a building, and that is either to buy an existing building and modify it for government, or to build a new building and modify it from the get-go for government. So those are the options they're wrestling with. We have, in our capital improvement fund, we have $27 million in a fund that can be used for whichever decision the commission makes to move forward. And I think by the end of the year, we'll be at a decision point of which way they want to go. And there's pros and cons to both of the new building and the existing building. There's pros and cons to both of those. But I will tell you, all of the commissioners are looking for the most cost-effective, long-term, 50-year solution to this problem.
You know, there seems to be dozens of empty buildings around the county, but does renovation really make sense? Wouldn't it, just an opinion, wouldn't a new building be the best alternative?
Well, you know, there are, and then you got to find the exact specific kind of existing building. It has to have, this is the people's building, so there has to be adequate parking and access. It has to be a certain amount of square footage for operations. And when you begin to add all those factors in, even though there are a lot of buildings available, very few match up to what we're really needing in a government operation. And then you're right. And construction costs since 2020 on average have rose 43%. So any type of work, rehab work and demolition work, has gone up a lot. And it becomes a cost analysis of two options. If we buy building A and we have to demo pieces of it and rebuild it, versus just building new from the beginning, which is most cost effective for the taxpayer? And the beauty of building new is you can put all kinds of environmental, different kinds of windows in, different kinds of heating systems in, to where over the long term, the taxpayer has the least expensive option. So there's a lot that goes into it. We spent, I can't tell you how many hours analyzing this, but at the end of the day, it'll come down to a commission decision which way they want to go.
Is there a timeline? Is time of the essence? I mean, you said we've been looking at this for decades.
Well, the time that's of the essence now is we were allowed under some of the federal dollars we got under COVID to pay, because the root issue here was the increase of the courts in the courthouse. So we were allowed under ARPA rules to spend some money on rent here, and that expires next summer. So the time exigency here is, if we don't get a solve, taxpayers will be paying rent in an asset that they do not own. So that's a little bit of a time exigency. We will get into some general fund money to pay rent here, and I think some commissioners feel pressure on that because their constituents would rather own an asset than rent it.
While sitting for jury selection recently, I noticed the state of the county courthouse. That building was constructed in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Any plans to upgrade or move there, Tom?
Well, you know, we'd like to be like Johnson County and build a fancy new $250 million courthouse, but I don't think we're there here locally with our tax base. So, no, we try to keep that building. And there's a certain beauty to older buildings, but you do have to keep them nice. And a courthouse, just the nature of the business that takes place there, it's hard on the building. But we try to keep it up. We spend a lot of money on that building trying to keep it as nice as possible. And I don't think there's any plan, because we've just spent millions of dollars on adding courtrooms into that building and giving the district attorney now essentially the entire second and third floor there. So we spent a lot of infrastructure money on fixing that up and making it usable. So nothing imminent for 525. But it's a great old building.
Talk about some of the other facilities around the county. How are things holding up at the jails, the adult and juvenile detention facilities? Are we in good shape there?
Well, yeah. I mean, so the county is responsible for corrections, and there's the adult detention facility, which is managed by the jail. You know, time passes so quickly. I remember when that was built, and, you know, it was state of the art at the time. But to put that into perspective, we're getting on 30 years now. That jail is getting older, and they're building jails differently today. Now, we spend a lot of money in the jail. We're getting ready in the 2025 and 2026 budgets. That entire heating and cooling system needs to be replaced over there, and it is very intricate and complicated and very expensive. So the jail is older. It's beginning to show wear and tear, and you talk about a tough environment for a building to run any kind of corrections facility, prison or jail. It's very expensive because the clients who reside in that building are very hard on the structure. So we spend a lot of money on the jail. New jails today, if you look across the country of what people are putting up, is it's just almost cost prohibitive. We just can't go there. So we have got to continue to take care of our existing assets, keep them running well. The sheriff does a really good job of managing the jail. We try to stay on top of things. And if you think about a jail, it's like a little city. There's a kitchen. There's medical facets. It's not just, structures to lock people in. It's a living, breathing operation over there. So we try to stay on top of all that type of work and keep the building functional and nice. And so we try to maintain that. Now, on the juvenile side, now we also have a corrections area that takes care of kids. And that main campus is down at the Lincoln and Hydraulic area. And we do have a plan, a fairly significant plan, to modify that campus. We really want to create a one-stop shop for kids and families that go into the system and have a court system down there, a detention system, a residential system, a community crisis system, to where we're seeing all these increases of mental health with kids, and then whether that's pandemic related or other types of stresses on kids, we're seeing more of those types of cases. So the commission has authorized over the next 2 years, 25 and 6, a $22 million rebuild down there. So that'll be a combination of renovating some of the existing structure down there and perhaps building some new. So that, for the community, that's just a plan to watch over the next year or two, because the commission will, there'll be a lot of talk about how that is built and efficiencies and effectivenesses that can be built into that remodel of that campus. But so we're hoping to make that better, because these kids are not having the best days in their lives, neither are the families, and whatever we can do from a building and efficiency perspective, I think the commission is very interested in that.
Seems to me when the jail, the adult facility was built almost from day one, that it was too crowded. It had too many people.
Yeah.
An ongoing problem.
To be honest, they were smart in the day. They built it to where you could pot it, we've expanded that jail. They built it such that it could be expanded upon. But honestly, we're at very low jail population now. Sheriff's done it, and the DA and the judges have all worked together. The system's working together to where at times the sheriff would go to 1,600 or 1,700 people. We'd have people out of county house because we didn't have room, and we are not there today. We have, last I checked, the sheriff was between 1,000 and 1,100 inmates, which is manageable in that facility. We have very few out of county. So it's gotten better in the last 2 or 3 years, and as long as we can maintain that, our existing structure and infrastructure should be okay.
You're listening to Issues 2024 on the Odyssey radio stations, and our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stolz. And as an a former law enforcement officer, Tom, the taxpayers would like to see you catch the criminals, get put them behind bars, get more, but it's not that simple when you start catching, you got to put them somewhere, right?
Yeah. Well, you always have to look at, when you're talking about crime, and I'm, as ex-police, let's hook them and book them, right? I mean, let's get them off the street where they're causing trouble. But when you look at it as a system, you have to look at criminal justice systems. That's police is just a facet of that.
Yeah.
And they are the most visible facet of that. They're on the street. They come to our doors. They are, protecting us in traffic situations. They are very visible. But once it leaves their hands, then there's a jail system. There's a regional forensic science component that has to do all of the types of testing that are required by the courts. There's a court system. There is a prison system. And then there's detention and corrections facilities within the community where you try to ease people back into society. So, people don't go to prison forever. I mean, very few. Hopefully Dennis Rader's there forever and maybe a few others. But by and large, most people that go into the prison system come back out. And so we have to prep for that. We have to realize that that's true and try to do the best we can for people to protect our citizens, but at the same time reacclimate those types of offenders back into the system where they can function. It is... You can't just look at police. You have to look at the whole system.
The annual budget drafting process is nearly complete. Got a couple more weeks. Will the final plan come in under budget as far as the spending's concerned?
It will come in with a balanced budget. We went into the 2025 budget discussions with about a $5 million shortfall. The commission in January of this year gave the Sheriff's Department about a $5 million compensation increase organizationally because the Wichita gave their police a lot of a raise. And in a world of law enforcement where it's kind of competitive, we're trying to keep our staff intact. So once that $5 million imbalance came in, we had to set about and try to fix that. And we got mostly there. We're about $1 million to $1.5 million we would go through and spend down some fund balance. But I feel really good about the budget. I think we're very balanced. There were some cuts and there were some denials of things that people wanted. But, you know, it's hard in a budget cycle. You have to prioritize. And I listen very closely to the commission and this particular group. They want to focus on core government service. So we spend a lot of time defining what core government service is. And once that definition was complete, then we put money toward that and took money from other areas that were not maybe considered core. And that's never popular. Some people are upset about that. We have a public meeting tomorrow night. I'm sure that people will express their opinions, but it's hard when you have a limited finite resource and we want to keep taxes down. That's part of a responsibility of government is to give the best service for the least amount of money. Our commission felt it was important that we reduce mill levy of property tax. They felt it was important that we do not capture all the valuation that the property was assessed at. So we're giving some of that back and trying to balance the budget. So I feel good about the budget. I think we did the best we could. I know some people won't like it, but at the end of the day, I think we're balanced and we're moving ahead in a good direction.
Did some talk that local government may rely too heavily on property taxes, or maybe there are some other ways to raise some revenue. Maybe has the county done any studies on the possibility of a sales tax, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be the hot topic for the fall, and you'll see commissioners already talking about that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be tied to this budget adoption, but this fall we will be in discussion with state of Kansas officials and not to raise taxes. I just can't stress that enough. There are no elected officials that I know of that want to raise taxes, but there is a lot of stress on property tax. And I think at local government, through actions in the last 20 years by the state of Kansas, we have had to come to rely on property taxes, not exclusively, but almost half our budgets is based on property taxes that people pay. And so we're relying very heavily on them. And I think we're reaching a point in the community where it can't get any higher. So the commission's talking about the idea of substituting some sales tax and relieve some of that property tax. And the easiest mathematic on that is to take everything that the county spends in the form of culture and entertainment. And we spend every year about $19 million on what I call fun stuff. It's right. It's the zoo. It's Exploration Place. It's TCAM. It's our museums. It's our River Festival or donation or county fair and on and on. And if we took that dollar amount and put a sales tax to pay for those items instead of property tax, we could reduce mill levy down by about 2.5 to 3 mils. So for the consumer, it's the amount of money that government's bringing in stays the same. But as anybody that owns property, commercial or real estate, would see a reduction in that tax. But when they went to buy goods at a store, they would see a fraction of a penny more on sales tax. So we're having that discussion now, and that's going to be the hot topic for the fall. I think City of Wichita is interested in that discussion. Some other cities around the county are also interested. Our chairman, Ryan Beatty, is going to be meeting with city leaders, mayors from around the county to talk about this, to see if there's something comprehensive we could do, and we'll go from there. So again, this is something for citizens to pay attention to. There'll be a lot of media on it. We'll talk a lot about it because we want to make sure the public understands what we're proposing here. So it's interesting times right now.
When it comes to spending, how much discretion does the county actually have? I mean, the state mandates a good portion of your programs.
When you have the discussion about what's core and not core, the first thing on the list you have to put is everything that the state mandates us to do. So that's corrections and a health department. And there's 16 departments of the 45 in the county that are direct state. We are a conduit for the state of Kansas to provide at-your-door service here in Sedgwick County. So those have to be done. They are mandated statutorily or by regulation from the state. And then the other core things are just your personal safety, your 911, your EMS, your sheriff, your fire staff. Those are clearly core in the world of expectation, and nobody else can do them. The government has to fulfill that role. So those are all things that are important. And to answer your question, that at the end of the day leaves very little discretion for the county. And that's the struggle of this to some degree. And all at the same time, you try to keep people, so we have to compensate them and give them benefits that make them want to do this. Some of this is very hard work, very challenging, very dirty work, where you're dealing with citizens who are not in their best form, not having their best day. And I think of sheriff and EMS. So you have to compensate and encourage people to stay with this organization. And so that's really the only discretion you have. And then when you pay people more, and the commission since 2021 has made a real commitment to compensation for county employees, then that means you've got to cut in other areas, and you can't maybe grow in other areas that you need to grow in.
Tom, what's the biggest challenge facing the county today?
I think that what we're looking at down the road, just in the future, I think, Steve, you and I have talked about this to some degree before. I just don't know if we can maintain this siloed approach of government that we are in, where we have all of these taxes which are hitting our people that pay for all these different things. We have one large municipality and several small municipalities, and then a county, and then townships and all these other taxing entities. I just think that the biggest challenge going forward is what can we do as a community, as a region, to really get efficient and effective with what people pay in taxes. I feel like there's a large segment of our population of 530,000 people. They're just taxed out. I think that they have hit their maximum. We hear from people that are potentially losing their homes or businesses because of tax rates, and that's not good for the community. So I think the biggest challenge facing the county is how do we work together with others to provide good service for our community that pays a lot of money for these services and do it as in an efficient and effective manner as possible. It's a huge lift, but we're going to have that public discussion.
And how do you see the local economy in the last part of this year? Is it going to maintain the same, grow a little bit?
Well, when I gave my budget overview, I hit on just kind of the state of the affairs. First of all, in the county, our staffing is way better than it was a couple of years ago, which is, I think that we're able to maintain employment. Inflation is clearly slowed. CPI is hovering somewhere around 3.5%, which is much better than the 8% that we saw just a few years ago, a few months ago. Some things have just really gotten expensive, and we all see it when we go to the store and when we buy things. So there are high prices out there, and that's true for government too, whether we're buying a hammer and nails or whether we're buying a vehicle. The cost of things are just so much greater than what they were, and we still have some remnants of supply chain issues.
Our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stolz. That's all for this edition of Issues 2024. We'll be back next week. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for being with us.
All right, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.